Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, it's only films to be buried with.
Hello, and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a giant Jenga carpenter, and I love films. As Thornton Wilder once said, my advice to you is not to inquire why, but to just enjoy the ice cream while it's on your plate, or the popcorn which is on your lap, or the nachos you bought that stink up the cinema, you fucking animals. Wow, that went from inspiring to scary in a way, Thornton. Very revealing. Every week I invite a special guest over, I tell them they've died, then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Barry Jenkins, Kevin Smith, Jamila Jamil, and even Ked Lambles, but this week it's the brilliant actor, writer, podcaster, and comedian, Mr. Rory Scovel. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you get an extra 30 minutes, I think, with Rory, where we go deep, talking about beginnings and endings, talking about an insane secret. We get the whole episode uncut, ad-free, and as a video. Check it out over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. Ted Lasso Season 2 is now all available on Apple TV+. You can watch the whole thing in one go, have a laugh and a cry. Also, Super Bob, the film we made, is now on Amazon Prime in a lot of countries, including the US. So get on that, have a laugh and a cry. I mean, they're all laughing, crying stuff, do you know what I mean? But in different ways. Anyway, have a look. So, Rory Scovel. Rory Scovel, I mean, he's genuinely one of the funniest stand-ups I've ever seen live. He's so fucking funny, and he's so brilliant. You can see his specials everywhere, Google it. He's got his own podcast with Daniel Van Kirk called Pen Pals, which is brilliant. And he's also a very, very, very good actor. You can see him in the Apple TV show Physical. He's brilliant. We recorded this one in person in his podcast studio, and it was a cracker. There's some lovely stuff in here. I think you're really going to like it. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 176 of Films to be Buried With.
Oh, let's.
Do I shy clap?
Yeah, could you do a shy clap? That seemed quite confident.
Yeah. Well, my shy. We might have different
levels
of shy.
You're American.
Yeah, my shy is very bold.
Incredibly. In Britain, that's like an arrogant clap.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That's a guy who's really full of himself. Hello, and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is me, Brett Goldstein, and I'm joined today by an actor, a writer, a podcaster, a husband, a father, a superstar, a film star, and one of the greatest stand-ups I've ever seen on this planet we call Earth. Please welcome to the show the man, the myth, the legend, is Rory Scovel!
That's right. Oh. That feels so good to hear.
That was quite a shy intro.
Yeah, that was so shy. I can't believe. I feel like I wrote a shy intro for you to do for me when I said the best stand up. I'm often referred to as the best stand up on the planet, so that felt good to just be reminded of that.
Well, yeah, it's true. You and I mean, you very kindly had me on at your gig. We're in LA. We're filming this in your studio.
That's right.
And you were fucking brilliant.
Thank you.
That was a fit set. That was fit. I was like, yeah. Now, one thing I want to talk to you about loads of things, but you're in Physical.
Yes.
It's on Apple TV.
That's right.
Congrats.
Our common bond.
You're very good in it. You're very, very
Thank
good.
You. Thank
and
you.
I have talked to you briefly in real life, but I wouldn't mind talking to you on the mic about it. Mm-hmm. I think what you do in that show is very difficult because your character, certainly in season one,
He's a dick.
He's a dick. Thank you.
He's a piece of shit.
He's a dick. He's a piece of shit.
Yeah.
But you do not play... You do not shy away from it. Like, you really, really play it, and you play it without excuses. Like, there's not little, like, winks, like, you know, I'm a good guy.
Right,
like,
yeah.
You really do it properly, which I actually think is very rare. How is that for you?
Thank you. Thanks for saying all that and for watching it.
That's great.
I like it. I actually... It's sort of interesting. I personally don't feel like I've done a lot of acting, but then you kind of look back and like smaller roles and guest roles and all these little things, and you start to go, I guess I have done a lot. I haven't done like a lot of big things. So I would say this is maybe one of the first times I've felt like, oh, I this is outside of my comfort zone. I'm not just given a bunch of jokes. The tone is different. Mm-hmm. And I think for some reason, the fact that I was an asshole and I didn't have to land jokes, it kind of felt like a relief. There was a part of me was like, oh, well, I don't have to land the joke, so that's a relief. But I do have to land what this character is supposed to be for the story. And I think that actually made it easier to not try to be likable, to not build a character where it's like, yeah, but I want people to like... I mean, you do want people to want you to be in the show and watch you in the show. But I think also there's an element where you're like, no, I'm supposed to be a dick. Otherwise, I'm not servicing where this is supposed to go. So I actually kind of liked it. It felt like a little bit of a weight was lifted.
Hmm. You finally got to be your true self.
Yeah.
What a relief. Also, you've done another thing, which is very inspiring, and I've been thinking about a lot, which is you did a completely improvised stand-up show a number of times. Got a special. It's on YouTube. It's
That's
called Living in Sin.
Yeah, Living in Sin. Also, a lot of people can't just get a special on YouTube. So it's kind of a pretty big deal to take and upload. It's an hour.
Yeah.
So it's just over an hour. So that's a big file.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And no one can just do that.
But you truly did an hour, no planning, just stand up.
Yeah, I did.
Every day for 5 days.
I did. I went to Atlanta, my favorite theater. Relapse Theater, improv theater, stand-up theater. It's the basement of an abandoned church that is now a comedy home. And I always wanted to go up and try that. I did it once at that theater a long time ago. They had shows at 1 a.m. and I did it there. And for some reason, I just didn't tell a joke and the whole show worked. And I was like, oh, I kind of want to figure out what it's like to do that and see what happens when you do it. I think that it's an interesting experiment in comedy because I think that there are comics that we both know, I think both of us, who are funny. We are funny when we talk to people. We are funny. And I think in a situation where someone goes, well, just go up there and talk, that is a little scary because, like, well, what will we talk about? But because our filter is already comedy, it will be funny.
Yeah.
I think there are comics who are more writers. Yeah. And maybe off stage, you would go, off stage, they're not very funny, but they're brilliant on stage.
Yeah.
I would actually like to see what they do without anything, you know, without this like thing they've pre-written, where I'd say I'm more of a performer than a writer anyway. So it's already working in my area, you know.
I like that you lowered the stakes by having a camera crew with you. but also, you edited. I mean, what we see is edits. We see. Yeah. I'm assuming the best bits.
Not necessarily the best, but yeah. I mean, we...
Like, how much, honestly, in an hour, give me like, percentage-wise, was it like, nothing is happening, I'm bombing, this is dark, what have I done, if at all?
You know what? It's so interesting is that that's how I went into it. I was thinking, all right, we've got some money, we have a camera crew, and I've got 6 shows. The ticket prices are super low, because I truly thought I was just going to bomb the whole time.
And what was it appetite? Like, what did the audience think they were going to?
They knew that it was all made up, and that's like, hey, it's $5. I think as we got closer to the weekend, it was like, I think the highest it got was like $10 or something.
Okay.
But it was super cheap saying, hey, this could be horrible. He's making it up. So if you like risking he's risking this, maybe you risk $10. And I think there are enough people that are like, all right, yeah, I'll go see what that's like. I would say overall, there wasn't a show where I left the show and I bombed. Okay. I think all 6 shows, 5 of which I think were good, One I didn't really like. And there was one guy who came to all six. And I asked him, he said to me at the end of it, he goes, do you want to know which show was the worst? And I go, Tuesday. And he was like, it was Tuesday. And then I said, but if you only came to Tuesday, is it a bad show? Or is it just comparatively, it wasn't as good as the others? And he was like, it was a fine show. He's like, but it was the worst of all of them. And I go, I was like, you know what? It was because Monday was so much better than I thought, because I was so nervous. I had all this nervous energy. It just came together. And it was a Monday night, but the place was packed because people just came to that first one.
Second night is always shit.
The second night, way less people. And I thought, well, how do I do what I did last night? And I was too in my head about it. And it just never kind of became a show.
Did you ever repeat stuff from the week on a different night?
No, no. I tried to not repeat anything. And if anything came up that I knew was already something I had, I either actively tried to talk about it in a different way or just whatever would steer me away from stuff I've already gotten out of it. And it was incredible. It was crazy. It's crazy to learn how much the crowd just wants a good conversation.
Yeah.
I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to go out and go like, no, it's gotta be, you know, and I don't know, maybe how you started in England, maybe it's a totally different vibe of like pace and how you build that rhythm.
I'm like, the reason I was inspired by it is because I was like, oh, it's okay. My favorite gigs are new material nights. I don't like doing my best set on a Saturday. Like once the joke really works, I'm like,
Then you know it.
Yeah.
The thrill, the adventure of it.
But also the energy you bring to a new, like, is this going to work? I don't know what this is. Is this it? I don't quite know what this is. Let me say it.
Yeah.
The energy you have, even if the joke isn't as well written as the finished product, is better than the finished product because people can feel it. It's fucking live. It's exciting.
I agree with you. I think you'd actually like this experiment. And I've told people, hey, on shows where the stakes are low, it's just like, you know, whatever, a mic that you're not like trying to go out and crush.
Yeah.
Like to go up and for as long as possible, do that. Knowing you have jokes, you can always get to your jokes.
And you didn't have like a list of like topics, like maybe I want to talk about food tonight.
So
like nothing.
So this is in the documentary. Originally, the idea was going to be that Monday night, all off the cuff. And then anything I wanted to work on, I could bring it in, but keep improvising, but keep working on stuff. And the idea being that by the time we got to Saturday, is it possible to have written an hour by the time I got to Saturday? And Monday night was so fun that I said, I don't want to do that. I don't want to know what's going to happen on any of the shows. I wanted to just all of them to be their own thing. And so that was a choice we made after we had pitched why we were getting the money and what the whole thing was going to be. We changed the entire idea on Tuesday morning. And then when Scott Moran, who directed and edited and shot it, he was interviewing me on Tuesday. And on Tuesday, I read an article, and for some reason on stage, that article popped up on Monday night about self-driving cars. And I talked about robots almost the entire night. I didn't even know that I had that much of an opinion about robots. But when you have to keep talking about robots, you just somehow are able to keep talking about robots. And so my revelation was like, oh, stuff I think of during the day, log them in my head and try to not answer them as like, you know, as questions and try to not answer them. And I think on Tuesday night, I think that's why Tuesday night was bad, or not my favorite show, because I think I stepped into it going, well, what did I think about today? And so I'm on stage, I'm going, well, what was today like? As opposed to, who cares about today? Right now, the conversation right now is happening. There is a conversation to have without anybody giving you a suggestion. There is somewhere to start and to go.
I hate to talk about, you know, spiritual shit, but... Okay. Do you think...
Come at me, dude. Come at me.
Do you think that the reality is when you're at your best, you're just channeling? So you going out with nothing is because you're fully channeling, but you going out trying to control it.
I think there's a channel. I think there is a tapping into... I 1,000,000% believe that there is tapping into this... I don't know what it is, but a space in your mind and a connection to the crowd. And I think as live performers, we feel it. When you're crushing... And you say, I could feel the crowd.
Yeah.
I've told my wife, I'm like, if there are 500 people in a crowd, I was like, someone who's been doing stand-up a long time, I guarantee you they can point to an area where they're like, I'm actually feeling something negative over there. And I bet you they're very close to one person who doesn't like the show.
Yeah.
I bet you they're within 10 seats.
For sure.
I was like, If you're new to stand-up, well, that's probably most of the crowd because you're not doing great. But if you've been doing stand-up for like, let's
people
say...
people throwing stuff is a giveaway.
Then you know. That's a sign. Yeah. Them not laughing, that's a sign. But if you've been doing it like 5 years, I bet you go, oh, I bet it's the left side. I don't know where. But I think the more you do it... And so I think when you're doing well, you feel the other version of that. You feel like the elation, the weird orgasmic place that you go to where you're like, oh, this is effortless. We're all in this space. You start coming up with tags in the moment that you're not even trying to find, but they're just presenting themselves because you're not looking for them. That's what the whole show is. Like Thursday night, I wrote a 60-minute version of what we're talking about. And it
but that's also
incredible.
On them. That's also on them.
Oh, it's big time on them.
That's the thing. I always get mad with an audience. Like, if you want to see a comedian at their best, you got to give them a wave to surf.
Yeah. You got to show them the support.
Because then you'll all have this magical thing.
I agree. If someone sits there going, make me laugh, it's like, well, already you've ruined it.
Have you ever done a gig in England?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. I did the Bill Murray Theater.
Oh, nice.
Two nights at the Bill Murray Theater, which was so fucking great.
That's nice.
I loved it. Little 80, 90 seats, whatever it is. I absolutely had a blast there. It's great. And then I did the Invisible Dot. Yeah, I don't think it's there anymore. Is it still there?
I think it's still there. Oh, yeah. Maybe they...
I don't know. I did that a while ago. And it was fun. It was in the summer and the AC was out. So it was hot as fuck. But I think the shows were actually pretty fun.
Sweaty.
Yeah. It was a sweaty night. Yeah. four sweaty nights. Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
What?
Rory.
What?
Oh, no.
What?
I've forgotten to tell you something. Shit, I should have told you when I got here to your lovely studio.
What?
Fuck. I feel like a dickhead. I should have said it when we left.
What?
No. Oh, it's awkward. It's like the first in-person one I've done in a while, so it's harder to do in person, I've realized. And it's also...
This feels like such a setup.
I'd left a post-it note on the steering wheel of my car so I wouldn't forget, and I fucking forgot.
Yeah.
You've died?
Freak out. Dun, 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 dun,
dun. You're dead, huh? I'm sorry.
All right, well...
How did you die? One might ask.
Do you really want to know?
Yeah.
Does anyone ever ask that? with all of this, do you really care?
Seems like you're not interested.
Look, have you ever heard stories like someone tried cocaine for the first time and they died?
No.
Okay.
But I like it if it's true.
That's not true.
What happened to you.
Mine was autoerotic asphyxiation. I decided to try it. And it was great.
Yeah.
But I didn't measure stuff. I didn't check.
You leaned too
Also,
far
I don't really totally know how to do that.
Right.
You know, I don't know if I was, I don't know. I don't know. I didn't have like a safety thing where I could have maybe, I used an old robe belt thing, not a traditional leather belt. I thought it'd be more comfortable with the
Do you think it's possible?
Softer material.
You thought you were doing autoerotic asphyxiation, but you were doing something else and you completely misunderstood what autoerotic asphyxiation was.
Well, I was jacking off.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
while choking myself.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, you got it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I think I screwed it. Well, obviously, I screwed it up. This is the first time hearing of it.
Yeah. So that was the problem with that.
I want to be embarrassed, but
it's a tragic death because it's the first time you were just experimenting, but no one's going to believe you.
No. They're going to think I did it all the time.
They're going to think he was a regular at this.
But I've left that space and I can't go back to it.
It doesn't matter to you.
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter that your wife and kid, because
probably the kid. The kid's probably going to find me.
The kid.
I was watching her for the week. So.
Okay. Okay. Well, I don't know a lot about psychology, but I feel like that's going to affect her.
Yeah. Well,
down the road, but it's not your problem.
Well, tell her mom to stop going on these week-long vacations then. And then I wouldn't have to try to hang myself while jacking off.
Yeah. It's a real... And look, you, in a way, I hope it inspires her because it's like, Daddy tried stuff. You know, he wasn't scared to try things.
He wasn't afraid to go to the edge.
As his special was called, Live Without Fear.
That's right. That's right.
And he really,
and I thought, this special alone isn't enough to show her where the edge is.
Yeah. But you didn't know where the edge is. And now you do. You very much do.
Yeah.
Just to be clear, because obviously someone's going to find you,
yeah.
your child. Were you using your imagination? Was there?
No, there's a, the TV was on.
Okay, what were you? What was on?
Do you have Wheel of Fortune?
Right. You just a particular episode, or just
anything that Vanna White's doing?
Mm-hmm.
I'll get the I thought, well, I've done all I can do with Vanna at this point.
Yeah.
I got to get the robe rope.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you call it? A robe rope?
Yeah, the robe rope, and try a new thing.
Robe rope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's also a shame because it is also now what everyone remembers you for.
Yeah.
And you had done really good stuff. Even the fans of Physical don't remember you're in Physical anymore. You're just the guy that...
Or they'll be like, if they really believe that character, they might be like, oh, this adds up with what his character would have done.
That makes sense. Do you worry about death?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Every day?
I think I do think about it every day.
Yeah.
I think I give myself unnecessary stress and anxiety by thinking about death and what could happen with death every day. My mother passed away on my first birthday. There's no doubt that psychologically my brain, I look back on this as such a strange thing. I don't know another version of a life. So I had to learn your mother died. You know what I mean? As opposed to if it happens right now, you're like, oh, I know the information. I had to learn about who she was. I had to learn about her not being around, her dying and growing up without her. So I think I grew up in a reality where I understood, it wasn't fantastical where, and to no fault, anyone's fault, I think people grow up thinking, well, bad things won't happen until they happen. And then you go, oh, they do happen.
But it already happened when you were...
And I think I kind of had that where I was like, if my friends were ever doing something dangerous, I'm like, oh, be careful. You can get hurt. And, whereas a kid, rightfully so, would be like, shut up. Yeah. I'll be fine. I was like, yeah, but not everything is fine. Sometimes people die. You know what I mean? So you sort of carry that. And I think that's why I think about it a lot. I think about it even more so because I now have a daughter.
Yeah.
So I think this is so funny coming off of her discovering my body. But thinking about, I don't want to give that to her. Mm. I don't want to put her in a position where as a kid, she loses a parent kind of thing.
Do you have siblings?
I do. So my older sister and I, it was my mom and dad. Then our mother passed away. And then my dad remarried 6 or 7 years later.
Okay.
And then had 5 kids. So I'm one of seven Catholic.
He really made up for those times.
No condoms.
Fair play to him.
Fair play. Yeah.
Fair play. Really went for it.
Right. Well, yeah. He's like, we got to really make some kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you had 6 years where it was just you two and your dad.
Yeah. And it was my aunt came and lived with us. My dad was the oldest of 5 kids. So his sister, just younger than him, moved in and took care of us and helped him out.
Can I ask a question that's very personal and you don't have to answer when it's dark? Was it a sudden death? Was she ill?
It was. She had cancer.
Okay.
Hodgkin's disease. So, but also, and this is the other thing about it, is as you get older, you realize you're getting everyone's versions of the story they want you to have.
Yeah.
And you don't get to just have the actual... just the black and white, this is life. This is what happened. This is who she was. But instead you get, and this is also a time when people aren't thinking so much about, oh, psychology affects children.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, it really matters to tell kids the truth and help them deal with their emotions. So I've been told that there was word that she was maybe going to recover and be fine. But then she had she was very weak and very thin from the cancer. And I think from the chemotherapy, I would assume, but she had a heart attack in the bathroom of the hospital. And it's crazy. But some people are like, you don't ever get the story of well, did everyone think she was going to get out? Yeah. Or did everyone think is this what people expected to happen? And also, it's a time now, I think that, I don't know so much, but people have said, oh yeah, that she probably would have just gotten treatment and been fine now,
I always wonder with something like that, I imagine the stories you've been told of your mum, I imagine, are all positive.
Very positive. She died. Very positive, yeah.
In a way that you probably don't get the full picture because no one will probably...
Right. Go. There was one...
She was annoying as well.
You know what, which I would love. Yeah. There was someone who... I met one of her friends from high school out for a coffee when I was on the road. And she had told me like some of the more deviant things that my mom had done in high school. And it felt so good because it made her human to me for like the first time. Be like, oh, there's this perfect person, which you know isn't real. But when someone goes, oh, she did like fucked up shit, you're like, oh, great.
Oh, that's my mom.
Yeah,
that's
exactly. You're prouder of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And your dad, I'm guessing, I mean, that's tough. I mean, was he? I'm assuming, call me old fashioned, but I'm assuming it affected him.
Didn't care. He did not care. Yeah. Just went about
you
his
wouldn't
day.
Know it was a chip.
Whistling all the way to work. Yeah. Yes, for sure. Mm. And he was only 25.
Fucking hell.
At the time. So I don't know how many of your episodes start with this much trauma, but my dad passed away last June of 2020. So it's only when he passed away, that it fully...
Oh, thank you. I'm sorry. This is all my fault.
I knew I'd roped you into this.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
I leave here and my parents are like outside waiting. Like, did he fall for it? What he must have gone through and how heavy it must have been sort of didn't fully... occur to me till he passed away, and then I could sort of start to see how fucked up and crazy that must have been.
Yeah,
and like truly shocking and traumatizing. But it's weird because when you're born into that, you don't see that perspective until, you know, I have always told people, like, when people had family members pass away, I was always like, well, you know, you get yourself together and you push on. That's what I did.
Right.
And it wasn't until my dad passed away, and other people have passed away, my grandparents and stuff, but, you know, at a time when that's when people pass away. Yeah. But my dad was only 65. And when that happened, I think that's the first time I was like, oh, I'm actually not emotionally prepared for this, because this is not what I thought it would be. It was also very unexpected. It was a heart attack. So it was just very much like out of the blue. Kind of thing. But yeah, it's strange. Do people open with parent death ever? Is that
this is the dream?
this is what I want.
Thank God.
Jackpot. You got the jackpot with me.
Come on down. Oh no, I don't know what the Wheel of Fortune phrase is. Spin the wheel.
Spin the wheel of fortune.
I do like the idea that as a child the kids were like, Let's jump off this, we'll be fine. And you were the one guy, you might not
make it. now saying it out loud, I wonder if they were like, what? what the fuck is wrong with you?
There's a very likely chance you don't make that.
I mean, that guy, obviously as a kid, I didn't, none of that was my personality. But as I got older, even into like teenage years, like I really followed the rules. I wasn't going out like... having beers and stuff. Like I would go out and just be like maybe a beer or a sip, because socially you want to fit in, you don't want to be that guy. But I was like terrified of like, oh, we're gonna get in trouble, we're fucked.
What changed? Did something change? Because now, you know, you take massive risks. I'd say doing the things you do are a bit risky.
I think maybe because these risks don't exist in the same way. These are more these risks are more internal pain and emotional emotional shattering if they don't go well. But I don't know. I don't know. I think it's my own interest that causes me to take these risks that I don't think are... You know, when someone says to you, like, well, how do you do stand-up? That seems like such a crazy thing. Mm. Like, you do know. You're like, well, it's not... It really isn't that crazy if you're kind of wired for it.
Yeah.
And socially, I'm certain, you know, like myself, you've probably bombed a lot. Like, you've probably said jokes that even with strangers at a party, and like you've lived in those moments of bombing to the point where you do...
It's safer on stage.
Your skin does get so thick that you're almost like, Well, now I don't even care if I bombed. I've bombed in situations where it really mattered. Now you're all just strangers if you don't like me. And also, being friends with other comics, we've probably, you know, I'm not going to keep roping you into my own experiences, but I've been roasted enough times by other comics where and you laugh at it, where you're like, oh, yeah, that you start to see the humor in your own faults and quirky shit about yourself, that it kind of builds this character that when someone's like, I don't know how you get on stage and tell jokes, like, well, there's no fear in it. I legit do like doing it because I've done it enough now where I fully do expect it to work to a degree. Right. And I'm fully aware that there will be a show that always pops up out of the blue where I just eat absolute shit. And then I switch into a gear where I try to entertain the comics who are watching.
Which is fun.
Sometimes it's more fun than if you were crushing in front of 1,000 people. You're like, I don't know, making these 4 comics laugh, knowing that I'm being sarcastic or whatever, knowing that the crowd hates what I'm doing. But yeah, I think it's sort of like, it's like that.
I'm always, when people say, how do you do it? I'm always like, how do you go to a dinner party?
I know. Yeah.
That's much more terrifying.
When I see someone crush at a dinner party, like there's so much charisma, that's when I'm like, who's that guy? What's he got?
How can he handle fucking food and comedy?
Yeah, how's he? How's nothing in his teeth?
Do you think anything
else? Is he eating all that cheese? Is he not going to have to shit at someone's house?
He's not even worried about bloating and he's just telling amusing anecdotes. What a fucking...
Everyone wants to fuck him, including me.
He's put me off my food. He's so fucking charming.
I'm going to choke myself to masturbating over him later.
What do you think happens when you die? Do you think that there's an afterlife of any kind?
I don't know. I think growing up Catholic, I lived with a lot of guilt for a long time. Not guilt, but guilt. Like, I lived a life of thinking there's going to be eternal consequences to my choices. And I stopped going to church once I went to college and was on my own. And I think the less you are indoctrinated with that type of thinking and those type of fears and those types of guilts, the more the world almost seems to open up and you start to see it through your own lens and realize, oh, that's a function to make me keep coming and buying your product, is to tell me that there's this thing. But it does make you also step back and go, well, in for instance, in terms of like hell, you go, oh, okay, I don't believe in a hell. That's, you told me to come here because then I would go to hell. But then you do have to look at the other version where you go, well, wait, does that mean, what does that mean about an idea of a heaven or an afterlife? And I've thought about it a lot. I did get depressed by it when that thought first hit me, that maybe this is all just, you know, organic, and when you die, it's over and that's it. And then I think I matured into a place of going, well, who gives a fuck if you just die and the lights go out? You won't be conscious and aware of it. So there isn't something dark and depressing about it. So I my answer truly is that I'm just one big question mark. I do feel instinctually like there's more. And there's about 30% of me that thinks that's because of religion. Right. That was forced into my mind, that I can't seem to separate this feeling. But I have to admit, 70%, obviously a greater percentage, does genuinely feel like, outside of religion and all those things, what is any of this, and how truly did it get here without the most simplistic, well, the Big Bang Theory or whatever, and being like, oh, evolution, and this is what happened. Like, but what? Like, it just seems so big and crazy that you can just keep backing up and wondering, how did any of this start and what is it?
I guess you don't want to be like able to see beyond your death because of how you died. You don't want to sort of be in the room when your daughter finds you, that sort of thing.
You don't want to be there.
You sort of hope it's just black. It's just black.
Yeah.
And there's nothing. But yeah. I got news for you. I'm afraid that's wrong.
The moment she walks in is when someone goes, I'd like to solve the puzzle. Things you can't unsee. That is exactly what is said as she walks into the room.
There's a heaven. You got to go there. But before you go there, you have to see the cleanup of your body. You regret. But anyway, there's a heaven. And it's great. It's filled with your favorite thing. What's your favorite thing?
Is this the theme? Movies? My favorite thing is movies.
Yeah, it can be movies. It could be other things too.
Probably golf.
Okay, it's filled with golf.
Yeah.
the seats are made of golf clubs.
Okay.
And the walls are made of balls. Huh. And everything's green and white.
Huh.
And
you took all the things that no one cares about golf.
There's lots of sort of difficult rich people standing around making small talk. I mean, yeah, your heaven is a fucking nightmare.
Judging you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
God, I'm at every dinner party we talked about.
Yeah. And yeah, there's sort of an awkward vibe, but there are buggies to get around.
Yeah.
Anyway, everyone's delighted to see you.
Oh.
And but they want to talk about your life through the medium of film.
Yeah.
The first thing they ask you is, what's the first film you remember seeing Rory Scovel?
And even in the afterlife, they kind of don't know my name.
Yeah.
They have to like, well, Scovel. Okay, yeah. Well, I know that I know this gets said a lot, but this is the first movie I do remember seeing.
Can't tell you truth. Tell you truth.
Back to the Future was the first movie that I can mentally recall seeing, because I didn't understand the flames after the car. I didn't understand any of the science that was occurring. I obviously didn't get the jokes. I think I was 5 or 6 years old at the time. I didn't understand what I was even watching. Right. But the musical score and the special effects were enough as a child to be like dazzled as to like, what are we watching? You know, what is this?
Did you watch it at home or in the cinema?
My memory, and I'm going just off what's in my brain, but I think I remember seeing it in theaters.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And did you think, I want that?
No. No.
Did you think?
I think I probably thought that car was cool because I was a little boy. I want a car like that, a DeLorean.
Mm. I mean, it's a great opening film.
Yeah.
Rory Scovel, what's a film that made you cry the most? Are you a crier?
I do cry at films. It's taken me a long time to openly do that, because for so long, you know, as we're raised as, I don't know what it's like where you're from, which is Australia.
Yeah.
I think because our society closes us up, that I held it in for a long time. But I do remember seeing Titanic with my aunt and not really knowing what I was going to see. No, I mean, I knew what Titanic was. But I didn't think I understood the story that I'd see. I don't think I understood what I was going to see. And I think it was maybe one of the first times outside of something like Saving Private Ryan where I got to sort of see something that probably did happen close to this version of a thing. And it was very shocking. Mm. And I remember it really affecting me, knowing that, oh, this was a horrific tragedy. When I, you know, your whole life, it's like, and then they hit an iceberg and, you know, people drowned. And when you just say that, you're like, okay. Yeah. But to see a version of that, it really got to me. I saw that movie several times in theaters and I think I cried every time.
So you enjoyed the trauma and devastation and crying. You were like,
I don't know. I enjoyed that. I think I couldn't control that, but I think I actually truly did. I know that I did. I really enjoyed that movie. I was 18, I think, in high school and actively was telling other people, you've got to go see Titanic. And I think people were like, all right, let's calm down about Titanic.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Surprising.
It's a great movie. I think even though people, you know, now so many years later, maybe kind of give it some guff.
Mm,
now that we're 22, 23 years past it, I still think it's a great film.
Good luck to it.
Yeah, we'll see how it does.
Yeah. Rory Scovel.
Mm-hmm.
What's a film that scared you the most? Do you like being scared?
I don't. I don't like horror movies. I don't like being scared in movies. And I'll never forget seeing the original It in seventh grade, sleepover.
Yes.
Two friends came over, Michael Quackenbush and Andy Kuber.
And real names?
Those are real names. And they came over and Michael brought the double VHS.
Michael Quackenbush?
Yep. He brought the double VHS. Now I see why you asked if they're real names. They are. That's the real name. Double VHS of It, Tim Curry's It. And it shocked me to my core.
Mm-hmm.
I was terrified. I don't know that I had seen a like real horror movie till that point. I didn't watch like Nightmare on Elm Street or anything like that.
Was it as shocking as the name Quackenbush?
Well, that one I got it. I had time to get over that one. I had time to process that.
No, it's called Quackenbush.
It is.
Michael Quackenbush.
Michael Quackenbush. Not joking. Very funny. Super funny dude.
You have to be. I wouldn't use that name in a script.
You want to know something else about that name?
Yeah.
Can I just say, what if he sues you? Can he sue you?
What, for saying he's got a made-up name?
He brought a condom. We're in seventh grade. He brought a condom?
Why?
And we just were all like, we were like, what is we? But like seventh grade.
What's
we
seventh
were
still grade? Like, how old is seventh grade?
12.
Okay.
So we were still kind of like, oh, I've heard of condom, but I don't really know what that is or what it's supposed to do. And he just like put it on. We were just like sitting there. I think we were like, oh, okay.
What, Quackenbush just got it out? Like, it's flaccid.
What?
That is fucking typical Quackenbush.
He just got it out. And yeah. It was just like, I just remember. You know what's so funny is that I know distinctly that no part of me was like, oh, dude, put your dick away. I think there was a part of me that was like, huh. That's how that's done. All right. And I didn't even know what to do with that knowledge because I didn't even.
Once
my brain wasn't even
once
in that
the condom
space.
Was on Quackenbush's flaccid penis, did you all. Then what exactly happened the moment after that?
Just, I think he just then took it back off and just threw it away. Now that I think about it, I think that was just in the trash. That could have been discovered and then that would have. Who knows what that would have led to?
Absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
No. Good for him. Listen, he taught you a lot.
I learned about safe sex.
Yeah.
From and now when I have sex, I think of Pennywise the Clown, and it all comes together.
So you don't like being scared because you've been through enough trauma, or because you're a big scaredy baby?
I think I'm a big scared baby. I don't love it. I have seen horror movies. I saw the new Candyman, and I honestly thought it was kind of mild. I loved it. As far as like horror goes, mm-hmm. I didn't think it was like terrifyingly scary. But it did have moments where I was like, oh, that's fucked up, or oh, that's a cool shot, like the way they did it. Yeah. But yeah, I don't seek it out. I don't seek out horror movies.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the film that people don't really like? It's not critically acclaimed, but you love it. You don't give a fuck what anyone says about this film.
So I have a few.
Okay.
And I actually don't know if these are disliked. I don't know what people think about it. But Contact...
Great film.
So I loved it.
Great film.
But I feel like I hear people kind of shit on it a lot, like in a joke. Like it's a kind of a joke. But I loved it. Great. I loved it so much. I bet you probably agree with this one also. Cable Guy.
Great film. It was very misunderstood.
It was very misunderstood.
Sure.
I think it's one of Jim Carrey's best acting roles.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. And then the third one, Rocky V.
Rocky V. In the ring. Telling me fight. In the ring. My ring's outside.
That I was like, that's who I want to be when I grow up. I want to go outside and fight. And I want to street fight like this.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that was street fighting. I thought that's what you did.
Yeah.
But to get to see, look, Rocky V, I think was the first Rocky I saw.
Yeah.
And it was like I played soccer. It was a traveling. We were at a tournament. We traveled somewhere for a tournament. And we went to see Rocky V, one of the nights to kill the night.
Mm.
And watched it and I was just like, I loved it. I thought it was great.
That's the right answer.
That I thought it was great.
Rocky Five.
But people,
the most
say,
maligned Rocky.
People are like, oh, this next when they. I can't remember what came after Rocky Five. It's, no, it's not Rocky Six.
It's Rocky Balboa.
Rocky Balboa. And people were like, oh, it's great because they kind of just act like Five never happened, and that made me so angry.
Fuck you, Five.
Like,
happened.
What do you mean Five never happened?
What, my life didn't happen?
Tommy Gunn doesn't fucking matter to you. Piece of shit.
Yeah. Fucking right. Rocky V is a perfect answer. On the other end of the scale.
Yeah.
What film did you used to love? You loved it, but you've watched it recently and you've gone, oh no, I don't like this anymore. For whatever reason that might be. It might not be the film. The film might still be good, but you're...
So I'm going to be controversial.
Uh-oh.
I think a lot of people won't be happy with this. The Goonies.
Wow. Let's have it.
When's the last time you saw The Goonies?
Not for a very long time. I'll tell you this, you may be pleased to know. Filmmaker Edgar Wright.
Yeah.
Thinks The Goonies is shit.
And that's why people sort of see him and I on the same level as far as filmmaking goes. Mm-hmm. They're like
similar styles.
Rory's resume is not as long, but his eye is there. Yeah, I want it to still be great. And there's elements of it that I do like, but I watched it maybe a year ago, and I said to my wife, this is the last time I watch The Goonies, minus when I do watch this with my daughter. Hmm. Because she will love it,
okay,
and it will give me a little bit of that spark, but I just don't love this anymore.
But you'll be secretly judging her while she's enjoying it.
Like, you're dumb. You're a dumb kid. You're more your mom. You're this more your mom.
Just leaning across to her. This is bad.
Yeah.
Why are you enjoying this?
Why do you like this?
That's
oh, the water slide?
Yeah.
Here's the thing I think about the water slide.
That's bad storytelling.
Here's what I think about the water slide. This is where my brain is.
Yeah.
If you lay down, that water slide's fine. If you sit up, those knives and swords are sticking down. Chop your head off. That's what I see.
That's the Goonies you want.
When people are like, Jesus, Rory. I'm like, well, if any of them sat up, they'd be dead.
Yeah, and we know why.
Yeah.
We know why, and it's totally a legit way of seeing the Goonies.
Right.
What's the film that means the most to you? Not necessarily the film itself is any good, mm-hmm. but the experience you had around seeing the film that will always make it special to you, Rory Scovel.
So, HBO.
Yep.
As a kid, HBO, love it. Love HBO as a company. but as a kid, when movies would come out and they'd be on HBO, Die Hard 2 came out.
Die Hard.
And my dad made me watch it. He was like, you're going to watch this. I remember my stepmom at the time being like, he shouldn't see this. And my dad was like, I don't care. He should see it. And he made me watch.
He needs to learn about
Die Hard 2. But that was like the first time I was allowed to I was openly given the opportunity to watch an R-rated movie.
How old were you?
I don't remember. I don't remember.
24.
It was probably a year or so. Last year. It's probably a year after Die Hard 2 came out.
Okay.
However long it takes to get to HBO. Because I remember it was like 89. Now premiering on HBO. Yeah, probably in that. So probably 8, 9, 10. 8, 9, 10. 11, 12. I could drive. I drove over to my parents from my apartment. Mm-hmm. And he said I could watch it. But that, not only did I really love that movie, because, you know, I hadn't really seen a lot of action movies.
And you hadn't seen Die Hard 1.
I hadn't seen Die Hard 1. I loved it.
Yeah.
But also I watched it like with my dad, who, you know, there's only so many times where your dad goes, hey, I want you to do this thing with me. You know, mm-hmm. I'm more like that with my kid because I think generationally we're changing fatherhood is changing.
Yeah.
But for my dad to be like, come here, we're going to watch this movie. It starts in 2 minutes. It's going to come on in 2 minutes. And to sit down and be like, what is it? And like, it's Die Hard 2. I'd be like, oh, I'm not allowed to watch that. But you're saying, like, I'm given permission to watch it. And then to watch it with him, it's like, we're just one of those, it's like one of those things that just lives in your memory as like a thing.
That's so nice.
Yeah. I don't remember sitting there the whole movie and watching it or any like particular thing.
Did he like fill you in as it was going, like, that's John McClane. He's been through stuff like this before.
Yeah. So he kind of was telling me what the first one was like. And I remember being like, oh, okay. Like, as a kid, I was like, I don't give a shit. Like, there's cursing. Yeah. There's, like, guns. Yeah. Like, as a kid, especially 8, 9, or 10, whatever I was. It could have been all of them. But, like, anything with guns, you're just like, yeah, this is the best. So
that's a very nice story.
I also sort of have that with Flight of the Navigator.
Yes.
My dad took me and some friends on my birthday, and we saw Flight of the Navigator. I have since rewatched it. That movie is horrible.
Mm-hmm.
It's awful. But when you're super young and you go with all your friends for your birthday to a movie, and that's the movie where you think it's fucking awesome, that's kind of a cool thing, too.
Do you think kids are just stupid?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, here's what I think. I think kids have such a low... such a small amount of experience mm-hmm. that their levels of comparison are so low because at their age, high art in any medium is not really available or recommended for them.
Right.
So they're sort of given stuff like Flight of the Navigator. And if you didn't know anything else, you would think that was a badass movie. You'd be like, oh, great.
Yeah, so they're sort of, you're saying they're not well-read and they're dumb.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple,
2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
They're done. Yeah.
What is the film you most relate to? Rory Scaven, if I may use your full name.
You should, only.
Thank you.
Even outside of this podcast.
Of course.
When I saw two movies, all my answers are two movies. Tommy Boy and Billy Madison.
Great.
Were two movies that came at the perfect time in probably both of our like adolescence. Mm. Where I didn't think there could be anything better. I thought it was just so fucking great. And I had such a silly sense of humor. So Billy Madison was just like the best. I loved how stupid and silly it was. And then Tommy Boy, you know, Chris Farley couldn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
Anything he did, it was like, this is our guy. This is who we love. When he passed away, when I found out in high school that he had died, that was the first time a celebrity died where I genuinely felt something like I knew them and I had lost a friend. Because you look up to people, but the people I looked up to were still, you know, no one was ODing. Yeah. They were like, you know, they were fine. But to hear that he died, it was almost like, what? How's that even possible? Yeah, I remember being shocked at how shocked I was by his death.
Yeah. That's very sad. And then by Derek is in.
I want all my answers to be sad.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely. That's the theme this week. Welcome to Sad Films to Be Sad.
Yeah.
By Derek is in Tommy Boy.
Yeah.
That's all we need to say on that.
Yeah. A treasure.
A national treasure.
Yeah. Is everything she's in, do they say, get out of a pool? Get out of a pool slowly?
I hope so. And I think.
I hope that's what has happened.
That's what happens.
And yeah.
It seems to, you know, I assume she's happy.
Right.
She seems happy. Yeah. I don't know. I've not met her.
She's doing great.
So you relate to those films because it was your sense of humor.
I think it was my sense of humor that day, and they just came at the right time where I thought, oh, that's like fun. I think I saw movies where I thought, oh, that's fun. Movies are kind of like fun.
Yeah.
I can't say this for certain, but it could have been like the first seed of being like, I want to do something like that or be in that. I can't say that for certain, but definitely it came at a time when I really thought about movies a lot, like really loved them.
What's the sexiest film you've ever seen?
Basic Instinct.
Thank you.
I wasn't supposed to watch it. I was at a friend's house. Me and two other friends, no condoms.
Quackenbush whacking on.
He was just
showing you femidoms.
He was just jacking off into a condom. I can't remember. I think it was Craig Crosby, Brenda McKelvey, and myself. And I'm shocked. You can tell if anyone watching or listening to this, if you do know anything about me and you have listened to my podcast, then you know I don't usually remember people's names. So these two events,
yeah,
you can tell are so traumatically placed in my mind that I really remember the details.
Interesting.
Of it. We weren't supposed to watch it. We said, I voiced that I probably shouldn't watch this. We were at Brendan's house. Parents okayed it.
How old are you? 12.
This is, I think, around 12.
Yeah.
Yeah. 12 or 13, maybe. And we're watching it. It's obviously fucking...
You've deliberately not invited Quackenbush because you don't want him.
We don't know what he'll do.
Yeah.
Knowing that there's blatant sex and nudity.
He's a loose cannon. He can't come to this.
He might bring...
What he did when a horror film was on. God knows what I'll do with Basic Instinct.
He's bored. He just goes to sleep. That's not what he's into. He needs clowns. Yeah.
You cannot take him to a Juggalo. A Juggalo gathering. But he, we watched it, and I'll never forget, his Brendan's dad came in and said something about, like, you know, there was like a bit of a, yeah, maybe we're not supposed to watch this because of Rory. And he's like, oh, that's fine. And like, it's looking back now, and really, truly, in this moment, I remember his dad. I always thought it was so weird. This dad goes, ah, yeah, I love shit like this. And it's only now that I'm realizing, oh, maybe we were at that age where he was trying to maybe be like, sex. Yeah. This is sex, and I like it. It's okay. This is okay. Like, I don't know what he was communicating, but I always thought that was so strange, and I thought, oh, he's just trying to, like, pal around with this, but I didn't realize, oh, we're at that age where maybe that's what you do.
He was watching it with you.
He just popped in.
Oh, he and just was popped like, in, went, I love this shit.
He's like, this stuff's great. And he's like, hey, you're guys, and you love okay. it. And like, and then he was out of there, and I just remember being like, oh, that was fucking weird. But now I look back and I go, ah, you know, maybe that wasn't so weird. Yeah. Maybe that was someone's effort at, like,
yeah.
relating to a deeper
He came thing. In wearing a condom.
He I was naked. He was naked. Started jacking off, and he's like, I love this kind of shit. And I was like, all right.
You were like, men are fucking weird. I gotta
stop watching movies. But I just remember that movie being like, oh, this is, you know, I you're gonna see nudity and boobs and stuff. It's actually not even as, I remember kind of being disappointed. Like, I think I thought this was gonna be porn. Like, we're gonna see legit sex. But yeah, I think I just thought, like, oh, I watched something I wasn't supposed to, and it really was sexy and turned me on. Oh,
it's fucking great.
Yeah.
I do think it's probably the last of the great sex films before porn became on the
sure.
internet.
Sure, yeah. Where it was like, place. It had that, you know, that mystery to it.
Yeah.
We're drawn to it. The lust.
Mm.
Yeah.
Man, I love this shit, like the dad said.
Yeah. I love this kind of shit. Like, yeah, all right.
All right. Anyone need a condom?
Condom? Anyone wants to want a condom while we watch this? No, I think I'm good.
There's a subcategory to this question. The subcategory is troubling boners, worrying wide ons. A film you found arousing that you weren't sure you were meant to.
So this, I don't know if I'm in the right zone with this,
mm-hmm.
but do you remember Just One of the Guys? Just One of the Guys, and it's a woman who pretends to be a guy and then at the end rips her shirt open and shows her boobs. Mm. And that was such a huge deal that that I started wearing condoms after that.
Yeah.
But I remember being like, and also this is only occurring to me now, maybe we were children of that generation where it was like, you know, like Meatballs and like these camp movies yeah. where it's like, and then you're going to, I'm Porky's. Like, you're going to yeah. see some tits, Revenge of the Nerds. You're going to see
comedy with boobs.
Yeah, I think that we kind of came up in a world of like, oh, there's gotta be boobs in the movie. And I think that was like maybe the first version of that I saw. And I was like, whoa, I'm kind of into this. So I think I like women that dress as men. I think I like women who pretend to be men.
I think you were very progressive at a very young age. And
thank
that's
you.
Great.
Thank you.
In a way, that was a sort of brag, that answer. Objectively.
Yeah.
What's the greatest film of all time? The pinnacle of cinema.
So I don't want to say Back to the Future again.
Okay.
It is one of my favorite movies. But for me, Boogie Nights is flawless. Yes, please. I think it's a flawless movie.
Love it.
And I think it almost depresses me how young Paul Thomas Anderson was when he wrote and directed that. To have that vision and imagination and confidence to pull off a movie like that, it's one of my favorites. I love it. I think it's perfect.
Absolutely love it. And I'm like furious with Mark Wahlberg for saying he regrets doing it. I'm like,
does he think that?
I think it's to do with I think it's to do with religion, or since he had kids.
Oh, that's probably
like,
it. Yeah,
he's like, I regret doing that now I have kids. I'm like, it's a fucking brilliant film.
It's such a great movie. It's to about? Me, it's his best movie.
Yeah,
for my tastes.
Agreed.
Yeah.
It's his best movie, yeah. I think, well, I go Magnolia. If we're talking
you go
Paul
Magnolia?
Paul Thomas Anderson's.
Specifically Paul Thomas Anderson. Boogie Nights will always be... You know, I don't think I've ever seen Magnolia.
Get the fuck off this podcast right now.
Well, this has been fun.
Yeah, I've enjoyed this.
I don't think I've seen it. I will.
You will, yeah.
Give me time.
It's long. It is long.
It is long, right?
Time.
I do like his movies, though.
He's amazing. His new one, amazing. He's amazing. Never does.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet.
Never does a bad one.
Licorice Pizza.
Licorice Pizza. Amazing. Yeah.
Yep.
Sure.
You know, Flanny's in a lot of his movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Flanny's in.
He's in that one. He's in Licorice Pizza.
He's in Magnolia.
Oh God, he just doesn't know when to stop.
Right. What film could you or have you watched the most over and over again? Rory's cover.
Oh, the most over and over again. That's a great question.
Oh, thanks.
You're really good at this show. Is this your first episode? I wrote down 4 movies.
Great. I mean, you've really struggled with this assignment, but that's okay.
Come I on. Love work. I love it. But recently, 3 movies that I've watched a lot: Soul, Onward, and Coco. All 3 fucking Pixar. Hell. All 3 Pixar.
Yeah.
All 3.
How are you watching Onward more than once, especially with what you've been going through?
Soul, sort of, as well. But
Soul, I can
Onward
understand.
Rips it out of you.
Yeah.
Rips it out of you hard. But I think it's just so good and so well done. And my daughter's always willing to watch those. And it's, you know, if I'm like, let's watch Soul or Onward or Coco, it's like, also, all of them deal with death.
Coco, I think I can get it. I'd watch that. It's beautiful. Yeah. It actually made me feel better about death.
Yeah.
Soul, beautiful. Yeah. I love its message. Onward, that's a one and done. I cried so much in Onward. Yeah. I'm never seeing that again.
You're never going to see it again.
Never. You can go fuck yourself.
You're so weak.
It's true.
You are such a weak man.
Yeah, I'm the bing bong.
So you can surprise yourself. Try it. You might love it. But one movie that I have, and I don't love this answer, but Die Hard. I can watch it all the time. But there's a lot that fall into this category, and I feel like they're hacky. Like, Die Hard feels hacky. Shawshank Redemption feels hacky.
But Die Hard is special for you because it was, watched it in the wrong order. You were like, oh, wow, look what he was like when he was young.
Yeah, but I personally am like, Die Hard set the bar for, in my opinion, and someone who's not widely well-read on all these movies, but like an action movie being modern and being like just badass. It was like, oh, this is that movie that inspired so many other movies. And it's so easy to rewatch because I think everything about it's really well done. I mean, it's Alan Rickman. I mean, that as a kid who has even a slight tinge of thinking you want to do something in movies, you see him playing that character and you're like, oh, being a bad guy can be like a fun thing.
Yeah,
and you kind of see it that way. But at the same time, you know, there's so many things you see in your life where it's so obvious you don't want to be the bad guy. You know, it's so like you watch Karate Kid. You clearly want to be Daniel LaRusso. You don't want to be Johnny. But with Die Hard, you're kind of like, I kind of like that this guy is jokey and a smartass and like not even like strong.
Yeah.
But clearly just shoots people and there's like there's no remorse. And then also at the same time you're seeing Bruce Willis fucking be a badass going through a building. It was just awesome.
It is magnificent.
Yeah.
And the other end of the scale, I don't like to be negative. I don't know if you do, so we'll do it fairly quickly.
I love negativity.
What's the worst film you ever saw, Rory?
Do you want some Rory?
Sorry,
you can say Rory.
Let me just check the notes. Rory Scovel.
It's in the afterlife. They have to check the notes. Oh, will there be anything more humbling than that?
And now turn into it. Which one is this?
Look, what movies you like, those matter.
Your name.
Labels.
Your life.
We're not labeling up here. I'm going to be controversial again.
Mm-hmm.
2001 A Space Odyssey, I think, is just a Christ. Load of fucking garbage.
Well, that's very silly, isn't it? You're silly boy.
And that's why you're dumb. Because
you're like one of those kids you were talking about.
You don't get it. You're a child.
You're an idiot. You may as well understand the Goonies with that attitude.
You know what? I also don't get... I'm not trying to be controversial. These aren't choices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think some people forget. Like, the things we like, we haven't decided. They're just there. But, like, I don't really get a lot of David Lynch movies.
Oh, my God. You're really pushing it.
Yeah. I just don't get them.
You really?
I feel dumb.
Pushing your luck.
Now, Twin Peaks. I love Twin Peaks.
Right.
I loved it.
Right. You're
but
back
like
on.
A lot of his movies, I walk away going, am I stupid? Because I don't get it.
Yeah, you're stupid.
I think maybe I'm stupid.
You're stupid.
You know, the only people that say I'm not stupid are people that also are like, I don't like him either. And I'm like, but is it because we're both stupid?
You're just hanging out with dumb-dumbs. You don't.
I do like.
But you like Twin Peaks. So
I like Kubrick stuff.
You
but
can stay in the room.
2001, I just thought, that's fucking.
Because you like Twin Peaks, I'm going to let you stay in your own studio.
Okay.
But it was fucking close.
Is David Lynch like your favorite?
Yeah.
He's your favorite.
I like love it.
Favorite.
Listen, you Twin Peaks, okay. I reckon I think about every single day.
Really?
Every single day.
That's at some impressive.
Point, I'm thinking about Twin Peaks.
But I'm
yeah.
I'm but all the other stuff?
That yeah, I'm into it. Oh.
All of it. Wow.
All of it, yeah.
Dune.
Yeah, okay, maybe.
The Elephant Man.
Do yeah, come on, David.
Who cares about the Elephant Man?
Right. I'm genuinely angry.
Mulholland Drive?
Yes, please.
Maybe I need to go back and try again.
Well, maybe you're dumb.
I think I don't want to find out. I don't think I want to know. Which is what a dumb person would say.
Dumb and lazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, thank you for coming on the pod. No, what's the... Listen, you're in comedy. You're one of my favorite comedians. What's the film that made you laugh the most?
So, Dumb and Dumber is a treasure forever.
Yeah.
It falls right in with Tommy Boy and Billy Madison in terms of timing and my adolescence and what I thought was funny. But it is on the throne compared to those two. I mean, those two are down here compared to like how genius that story is, how brilliantly acted. It's just the fun. I think it's just quotable forever.
Yeah.
And if someone just saw it now, then I go, this is fucking stupid. And I go, you're probably not wrong. But I saw it when it was amazing. And then in college, we're still quoting it and loving it. And then beyond, I've watched it since. It holds up perfectly.
Hmm.
But I want to throw two movies out there.
Okay.
That I think are super funny, that they deserve respect. Vacation, the remake
yes.
with Ed Helms. I tell people, watch it. And they go, what? The yeah. remake? And I'm like, it's not really a remake. It's not the same tone. It's not the same at all. It is brilliantly funny. And the vignettes of sketches are perfect. I think it's great. I think it's a perfect, perfect comedy. And also, They Came Together. Amy Poehler, Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
I love that kind of silly, literal comedy. And that one blew me away. I didn't see it coming. I didn't know that's what I was about to watch. And then I watched it and was like, this is genius. I love it. David Wayne knocks out of the park often for me.
Really good answers.
Thank you. I just printed them offline. This is someone else. I love David Lynch.
Rory Scovel, you've been beyond wonderful. I appreciate you sharing everything you shared. I appreciate how funny you were.
So much pressure.
However.
Oh, fuck.
When you were left to look after your daughter for a week by your wife, who keeps... just going away for a week and never quite saying where or why, but that's nothing suspicious about it. I just think she's got things to
she's
do.
Fucking somebody. Yeah, yeah.
She's got well, that works, non-specific work things.
I know what she's up to.
Yeah. So she went away again and left you in charge of the little girl.
Yeah.
And it was about 3 o'clock. You just got back from school, I imagine, and you were like, "I tell you what, before I put on your tea, your dinner,
yeah."
I'm just going to pop upstairs and try something I've never tried because you like to try things and you...
But stay out.
Yeah, stay out.
Yeah.
Daddy's trying something. And you say to her, I think it's important you try something new every day.
Yeah.
She goes, thank you, Daddy.
Yeah.
And you go, but that doesn't mean you have to see what I'm trying every day.
We don't have to share with each other.
Yeah. You try your... tell you what, we'll meet in half an hour. You go try your thing. I'll try my thing. We'll discuss.
Right.
She goes off and does her thing. You go in your room, you get the rope.
Yeah, rope.
That you stole from a hotel dressing gown.
Yeah.
And you put it around your neck. And as you learned as a child, you only ever masturbate with a condom on. So you put it on.
Yeah.
It part one. Oh, no, Wheel of Fortune was on.
Wheel of Fortune.
And the question, they were just struggling with things you can't unsee.
Yeah.
And you pulled the cord whilst also masturbating. You were like, this is quite like multitasking. And you were losing your boner because you were confused by it.
Yeah.
Do this, like doing a 69 to yourself. Was there too many things happening at once?
Yeah.
Anyway, you were sort of frustrated with, like, I thought this would be easier than I thought. And you pulled and you suddenly choked yourself to death.
Yeah.
And you broke your whimper and you were dead.
Yeah.
And you collapsed on the floor. Your daughter, having finished her new thing, which was just spelling.
Yeah.
She came in, Daddy, I've done a new spelling. And yeah.
And then she heard on the TV.
Things you can't unsee. Spin that wheel. And then I'm walking past with a coffee, and you know what I'm like.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I should check in on Rory. I think he's parenting alone this week again.
Yeah.
I know he gets worried when he's on his own too long. I'll pop in. Your little girl seems fine. Don't worry about her. But anyway, I find you. Oh, what an absolute mess.
Yeah.
There's fucking condoms everywhere. And
all the body paint that I forgot to mention.
You absolutely covered in body paint and glitter. Splattered all over. You look like Blue Man Group, but with glitter, like you've put your head in
that's
glitter.
Right.
Which was a little bit you'd left out. Anyway, I'm like, fuck it, all right. So I get your kid. Can you help me? We lift you into.
Can you help me?
No. No regard for the kid's emotional trauma. Can you help me?
Could you get his feet? He's heavier than I thought. No disrespect.
Yeah, just no, I'm a good 195.
No, it's fine. In my head, it's no judgment. It's more I hadn't worked out for a while.
Sure.
Put you in the coffin, but. Because I'd imagined you smaller in my head, the coffin isn't the right size. So I'm really having to stuff you in. I get your door. I said, can you just chop up some bits of it?
Yeah.
Give her a knife.
So I get
you
that.
Do new things
I get that.
Cuts
I'm
off
not
your
there
feet.
Anymore.
Stuff it in. We stuff in everything. She's actually very, very helpful and she seems fine. I won't worry about it.
Yeah.
She learned some new skills. It was great. Anyway, the coffin is now absolutely jammed.
Yeah.
Full of your dead body.
Yeah.
And there's really only enough room for me to slip one DVD into the side of the coffin for you to take across to the other side. On the other side, it's movie night every night. What film are you taking to show the people of heaven when it is your turn? And you can do a Q&A afterwards if you want, but that's just setting up the evening for you. What film are you choosing forever, Rory Scovel?
I'm choosing the porn DVD, Laying the Ghost, that I...
I don't know it.
No one. There's so much porn out there. Why would you? But I just remember seeing a trailer on another porn in college for a movie, Laying the Ghost, and it just looked like some pretty good sex scenes.
Right.
And I kind of obsessed over wanting to possess that movie and actually watch it. I've since found it on porn sites.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Is it about having sex with a ghost?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great in heaven as well.
People, that's right. It's relatable.
Yeah. That's great.
And it's got a lot of hope.
How do they portray the ghost that's having sex?
Played by Peter North and TT Boy.
Yeah. Are they just like in like powder?
No, they're normal.
Just normal.
They just said they were ghosts. And I kind of...
And everyone believed
them. And I took them at their word for it.
Don't worry. Don't need to call the police. We're ghosts. They won't be able to see us. Okay.
Yeah. Or they will. But either way, we're ghosts. You're like, oh, well, there's no reason for you to lie.
There's no reason for us to not have sex, I guess.
I believe you. So, yeah.
That sounds good. Well, that's a lovely, lovely gift for them, and they're really going to appreciate it.
Yeah.
Rory Scovel, is there anything you would like to tell people to look out for, to listen to watch, other than Laying the Ghost, that you're in?
If you want to watch the first season of Physical, it's on Apple TV.
Highly recommended.
Plus, I have a special out on YouTube that's called Live Without Fear. I also have an album on Spotify from those improvised shows, also called Live Without Fear, but it is not any of the material that's from that special. It is a whole other hour of jokes, which I'm really proud of. So I would love it if people check that out.
And you take nothing from those shows now and do them in stand-up, do you?
I would say my next hour I shoot, probably 70% of it will probably come from those improvised shows.
Great.
That kind of became my act. Yeah.
Brilliant. Rory Scovel, you're a fucking pleasure.
All right, thanks.
Thank you for doing this. Enjoy your death.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for doing this.
I'll see you when you die.
Good day to you, sir.
Thanks.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
So that was episode 176. Head over to patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra 30 minutes of chat, secrets and video with Rory. Go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star review, but don't write about the show, write about the film that means the most to you and why. It's lovely to read, helps numbers, everyone likes that, etc., etc. Thank you, thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you so much to Rory for doing the show. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Lydon for the photography. Come join me next week for another brilliant episode with comedian Jimmy Pardo from the Never Not Funny podcast. It's another smasher. So that is it for now. I hope you're all well. In the meantime, thank you for listening. Have a lovely week. And please, be excellent to each other.
From Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.